time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. I'm Jamil Zainashev.
I'm Travis Gamble.
And I'm Mike Persine, and you're listening to Brew Strong.
Like, it's a sort of voice modulator thing that gives you some sort of echoey thing.
Only when I say Brew Strong, or is it the whole time?
A nice reverb on Brew Strong.
Yeah,
like only the Brew Strong. I don't know.
I got a foot pedal down here. I don't have a foot pedal.
All right. I want to mention again that Blickman is retiring. Our dear friend who sponsored the show for the last 16 years, so you don't have to pay for it. Still, you can send a nice message to him at feedback@blickmanengineering.com. Tell him how much you've appreciated him being around and innovating brewing gear for oh so many years and making your brew day happier and prettier and better. Check him out. They're still going to be in business and still going to be, creating amazing things and hopefully still paying for this show, please. And, they got commercial gear that you can buy there if you're moving into the commercial. Yeah, they got everything. They got the works. Just check them out, blickmanengineering.com. Anyways, we're going to hold a retirement party for him up in North Tahoe at Alibi Ale Works. And there's a long story where if you're listener, you would remember the competition or the drawing we had where Blickman and I and John Palmer went out to brew with Kevin Drake in his home in Kings Beach. And then, lo and behold, Kevin opened Alibi Ale Works, which is now one of the finest breweries in the region. And so we're going to have a party there May 4th, 2024, Alibi Ale Works in North Tahoe there. And watch the social media and you'll find out the deets. But Blickman will be there. I'll be there. Palmer will be there. Mike will be there. Justin Crosley will be there. Blickman will be there. Kim Drake will be there. It's going to be a blast. Also, people have been asking for Brew Strong gear. Since you asked, I have delivered. You can find it on Etsy in the Mr. Malty store. MRMALTY store, Etsy.com/shop/Mr. Malty. Find it there, buy your gear, be cool. Hey, just like this. Because we're in strong now. It's a sweet logo.
I was going to say, Travis, didn't you post the link on Facebook or did that come down?
It should be in the chat for this show.
Yeah, there you go. So don't even have to look. It's right there. It's right there.
All right. What else do I have? I don't know. I think that's it. Unless either of you have something special to say.
I will be going to Vegas as part of a conference, but I fully plan on checking out some cool breweries down there.
Nice.
But in the chat, if you have any recommendations for me, I want to check out. I'll be there 4 days. I'm figuring I can probably hit 3 or 4, just get a little check in before I go to sleep because I got to be up in the morning for these conferences for my professional life. But definitely want to check it out. So if you've got any big ones.
You can have the most amazing time. You got to get in contact with SNAFU, which is the Southern Nevada Union of Fermentation, whatever.
Fermenters Union or something. Yeah.
Yes. They are wonderful folks. Known a lot of them for a long period of time. I went out there about a year ago and met up with a bunch of them at, we started at the Silver Stamp, which is got to be the best beer bar in all of Las Vegas, probably all of Nevada. It is freaking fantastic. The beer menu is wonderful. They curate a great beer menu. It's a great vibe in there. The owners are wonderful. The crowd's wonderful. So you start yourself at the Silver Stamp.
The Silver Stamp.
And that's where my memory gets a little fuzzy. And then, so the names of the breweries we went to from there, you can walk from there to,
it is fuzzy. It's fuzzy, all right? It's tough.
Well, I've been working on good tips for Mike. I'll let you know. My big plans are to hang out in the Houston metro area where I live and continue to drink beer. That's what I do.
Yes. Nice. There's a ton of breweries there. They have kind of like a brewery row. Voodoo Brewing. Yes.
I think it's called the Arts District or something like that.
Yes, it's the Arts District. So Craft House has got some great beer. That's not the brewery there, but there's Hop Nuts and Neon Desert.
Yeah,
it's great as well. Yes. So it's temporarily closed. I don't know. But you get wow. But Neon Desert was good. Craft House is great. I did not go to Hop Nuts. But there's a number.
Huddle or something, and then there's Maybe. Abel Baker and the
Yes, but the place to start is the Silver Stamp.
Silver Stamp.
222 East Imperial Avenue, Las Vegas. It's fantastic folks, fantastic beers. Check them out. You won't be disappointed. And again, get hold of the folks at Snafu.
Probably. I will. I do know those guys too.
Yeah, there you go.
We do a Nevada State homebrew competition every year, and it's Snafu's always taking home more medals than everybody. But we're small, but we give it our all.
You go, up here champ. In
Little Reno. Yeah.
Buckaroo.
Yeah, we're little guys. So.
But let everybody know. I'm sure you know a lot of listeners would enjoy meeting up with you out there if they get a chance. Just don't embarrass the very strong crew, because
I'll do us all good.
Yes, you gonna have to.
And if not, I will deny that I am the person I am.
You wear your Brew Strong gear, and when you get too drunk, you just take it off.
Yeah,
and everyone just knows you're drunk and not Brew Strong.
This essentially what Travis and I did at Sandbrook's, meeting up with the lab homebrew club.
Yeah.
We ended up switching shirts with other people.
That shirt was way too skinny for me.
Hey, you look like you're my size. You want my shirt? I'll take yours. Oh, man, I wish I was there for that.
Yeah, it was, Ryan Collins. He's listening. Sean was extra generous with the taps there at Sandbrook's, and he just kept pouring, and we had to try every beer a couple of times. And when we say try, we mean have a pint. And so, we were having a wonderful time. Anyways, let's get on with the show. Let's get cracking here. We got some interesting questions. We'll do it this way, since we're all feeling good. A little thank you from Sean. Sean says, a different Sean, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate everything you do for the brewing industry. You took me from a listener to an all-grain brewer with confidence. I have had great success because I had great instruction. I can't say it enough. Thank you. Have a great day. Oh, that's very nice. Thank you, Sean. We appreciate it. We appreciate that, you found the information useful, because without it being useful to somebody, we are just wasting time here. So
blowing hot air.
Very much appreciate that. All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will have some of your questions right after this.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Brew Strong. We are talking live Q&A here. We're answering your questions. Ryan wants to know, what's up, guys? Chilling. Hey, same.
Hey, Ryan.
Podcasting. What's up?
Sup, Ryan. I first met Ryan in Idaho, I think.
Very cool.
Tasted his Russian Imperial Stout, and then we brewed it at Heretic. It was a blast. Let's see. I still have some brain cells at work. I still have memory. things.
You almost hear them kind of snapping.
Yeah, we can fix that.
That's something else that's going on. guidance on using final runnings for a mini mash. Charles asks, I have recently done a few all grain brews in which I use the final runnings to make a small batch of offspring beer using what is essentially a mini mash method with DME to get the desired gravity. In each case, I collected about 5 quarts of wort with gravity in the range of 10.12 to 10.14, added around 1/2 pound DME, and boiled down to 3/4 gallon into the fermenter. Each of these beers has turned out very nice, with a good malt character reminiscent of the parent all-grain batch, but distinctly different thanks to, in large part, to the hop and yeast selections. It does extend the brew day with the additional boil, etc., but since it is such a small batch, the extra time is not a big issue to me. And I like the opportunity to do a little experimental variation with relatively little effort. The only problem is that there doesn't seem to be much shared knowledge out there regarding any changes in the character of the runnings over time. That is, does the balance between sugars, dextrins, proteins, etc. change over the course of the sparge louder? Also, is there a good way to determine the expected gravity and color using any recipe calculation program? I can make a reasonable guess doing the calcs by hand, but it would be nice to include these in my software. For what it's worth, I batch sparge, usually collecting 2 equal-sized runnings for my main beer and use a smaller sparge for the final runnings. Thanks.
Yeah, this is a fortified party gal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Party guy with a Y. Oh, she's got
it. Yeah, my software, if it does it, I haven't tried to predict the party guy. I mean, my current system, I have almost nothing left in the grain after I use a brew in a bag in an Anvil Foundry. And so I'm getting the best efficiency I can into my boil, not into my dripping out of the mesh afterwards. So I can't advise on predicting what's left. Personally,
I have not done a party gal. I was just kind of go like what Travis was saying, get the max sugars. And then as far as I understand, those last runnings, you don't want when they're below a certain Play-Doh because it's extracting tannins and your pH is shooting way up.
Right.
So you'd have to plan for it, right? And split the batch at a certain point. I haven't tried that yet. So
I think you want to keep your pH from rising too high. And as long as you do. You can go pretty low. I think it should get more organic, I guess. And I don't know that you're necessarily extracting more tannins at that point, unless the pH is going up.
Okay, but, surely the changes.
Exactly. So the the amount of the other malt compounds that you have, the sugars and all that you're extracting. Maybe you're extracting the same amount of tannins. I don't know, but there's less of anything else to really balance it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes more tannic over time, as you get thinner and thinner. So yeah, the amount of sugars do change. The amount of proteins probably change. Everything probably changes as you run more water through your grain bed.
Can you guys think of an American brewery that puts out a 2-beer series of, primary, secondary alpha party gal? I mean, in England, it's very common.
Right.
But here.
Yeah. For example, like Fuller's where they, they collect this, they collect that, and then they blend. And it's kind of a standard thing.
So you could walk in and have that and understand for yourself what this brewery does. And that's the differences. And I just don't. I knew this guy that used to have a pro brewery that probably could have done it, but
I'm not aware of any American breweries that are doing it, there might be some, if so, let us know. We might actually have you on the show to find out what you're doing and how it turns out. That would be fun.
I would say though, maybe his problem with finding any kind of research is that he isn't searching that term party guile, and I don't know if he probably, maybe I'm being wrong here, but that's maybe where there's plenty of literature on that. So
there you go.
Our special guest, Neil, who didn't make it today, he can talk on Party Gal for days, I bet.
Yeah.
And really educate Charles, who hopefully Charles is still brewing 8 and 9.5 years later.
Hey, Hey, good luck to you there, Charles.
Let's see.
Ryan is asking, I'm making a New Zealand Pilsner. When is the best time to add dry hops? I'm using thiolized lager yeast. I typically let hops set for 48 hours and then drop out my conical. Is this best done at diacetyl rest or after? I just do not want to drop out my yeast too quickly. Thanks for everything.
I'm a cold dry hopper. I think with lagers and pilsners and dry hopped anything, you're going to pull more fruit character and you're going to get more of these kind of fruity, less green by letting it finish and then cooling to 60 and then adding your hops. I will say I've heard a lot of research about haze, and you can actually use hops as almost a clarifying addition if you add them right at knockout. So basically, like you pitch them with your pitch just a little bit and it can actually help clear it up. But I tried that with a West Coast. It worked really nice. So if you're looking for clear,
you're saying adding them at a little bit in at the beginning of knockout and at the
it was really cool in the
fermenter or in the
when they were discussing that haze forming protein or yeast, the haze yeast, they said that they noticed that early additions, like first like yeast pitch additions of hops, had a clarifying effect if you had haze positive yeast. And I don't know if Pilsner has any haze positive characteristics. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But the cold dry hopping, I've noticed, can throw a very, very strong colloidal haze. And so I like doing that because of the flavors. But if you're not looking for the haze, you might think about that that fermentation pitch addition, just a tiny one. Like I did like an ounce. On a 10-gallon.
So I live with this question on, you know, well, there's thiolized yeast and there's more thiolized yeast. And then there's yeast that don't have to be thiolized because they have it naturally. And it's like, how much of this do you need to get what you want out of your hops? Now, if he's waiting post-diacetyl, that is at least still warm. So there's still yeast in suspension, but not but a fraction of the yeast in suspension. And now he's throwing in his hops, trying to get his thiolize effects in his hops. Has he waited too long for it to thiolize those hops? I would do multiple additions personally, you know, before, during, and after probably. And I say would, I have, that's what I do. But yeah, I think there's still a lot of magic out there on thiolize, no matter how much I read about it. I just don't get to the bottom of it.
Well, for me, if you're looking for thiolization, you know, I always look at, you know, what's in the whirlpool. I wouldn't, you know, be throwing dry hops in and expecting thiolization. I'd be, you know, prepare your wort properly with whatever hop compounds, you know, do a low, you know, a cool whirl, as they say, as the kids say nowadays, you know, like 170, 175 Fahrenheit, whirlpool. And you put your hops in there. And also, you know, there's, you know, compounds that can be thiolized, you know, from the malt as well. So I think, you know, you set that up for success at the beginning. So you don't worry about that at the end.
Do you skip the whirlpool to try to not give the flavors that are not thiolized? I mean, I've seen recommendation on that, but I've never taken that step. Not whirlpool. Do you skip the dry hop to keep from offsetting the previously thiolized hop profile? I always still dry hop, but I've seen things that say, well, I see things. Phantasm wants you to back off on your dry hop so you get more of the thiolized effect.
Yeah, that's what the science is bearing out, that mash hopping with high precursor hop varietals like Saaz or Cascade, and then heavy whirlpools that with, again, selecting for hops that have high precursors, and then the dry hops are kind of, you need to subdue them. Otherwise, they will hide all of the work you've done to make the thiols. That I was just commenting on when to dry hop. I thought he wasn't asking about, I'm trying to read it right now.
He was saying
I do mash hop quite a bit and quite a bit of whirlpool. I've heard that too much hops can work against the yeast.
Yeah.
Can I say this? I really don't care for the thiolized yeast. The flavor.
But you heard of Mike, send me your thiolized beers, not him.
Right. It's just like,
yeah. Well,
I don't care for that flavor profile. It can
get samey.
Yeah, it's just a little weird. It doesn't taste like anything normal in beer.
Well, and that's like the balance that I like to strike with any beer that I make, even hazies, is that if you go for the moon and they have these hops that are these yeast strains that are crazy with the thiolization, and then you're throwing Phantasm in there, it's like, yeah, you're going to, the beer's not going to be balanced. Mm-hmm. And like you said, that flavor profile will become not good. So I always try to balance it out. And I was messing around with my thiolized yeast, but I like them to complement, not to be the the lead actor.
Well, and you know, and I'm sure I'm going to get lots of hate mail now that, you know, oh, you know, Jamil hates anything that, you know, from, you know, Omega or whatever. It's like, no, that's not the case.
It's not, you know, your style.
It's similar to, well, it's similar to, you know, the early, you know, NEPA efforts, you know, it was, you know, there was just a lot of bad ones and it was like, yeah, this is crap. Yep. And then once people dialed it in, it's like, okay, this is really good. You know? Yeah. Yeah, I think the same things happen with the thiolized yeast. It's like, people are making some really crappy beers with it. Yeah, you know, that doesn't mean the product's bad, or you know, the technology or the tool is bad.
We're gonna assume that Ryan is making great beer with his thyalized yeast. People, Ryan, go ahead and send me the samples.
People have just not quite dialed in, you know, how to do it best. Everyone's just like, I want the most thials possible. And that's what 90% of people are doing. It's just like, you know, I just want, you know, thials.
Yeah.
And they're making crappy beer.
Again, Ryan, not you. Jamil's not talking about you.
I would just like to say,
Ryan, send us some beer.
You know, like Michael's saying, some balance, you know, let's try and, you know, use this tool in a way that integrates well with the rest of the beer. And I'm sure there's some people that are making fantastic beers with it, but I'm rarely tasting those. So I'm not a fan at this point.
I've used all the yeast. I do like them, sure. Honestly.
And you sent me how many of those? I don't know.
How many of mine did you not like? That's how we figure out how many I sent you. So Ryan, to answer your question seriously, if you're going for the thiolized, bring your dry hop down, but go ahead and add it after your diacetyl rest when you know your beer is just about done.
And I would think about, I don't know too much about this Lunar Crush, but if that's one of the more aggressive thiolizing yeast, you might want to think about doing a like 50-50 that with some Chico or something that's going to have a lot less, you know, kind of balance it back, drop back, kind of give it a little bit of like mystery and like, hey, I can use this flavor because I want to push the passion fruit. But then with the hops, I'm going to go this way with like some Nelson would be great with a New Zealand Pilsner, which will have like that white wine, lemongrass. And you can kind of really develop this really cool beer that has great balance and flavor. But it's not just passion fruit, you know, like right in your face, like fake flavors. Like it was a.
Well, it doesn't even really taste like passion fruit. It's kind of like a fake thing. And I think that's why, you know, I don't like it when people use, you know, artificial extracts, you know, fruit extracts or something in beer.
Yeah.
But if you're using real fruit and then you're kind of missing a little, you know, you can use like a drop of, you know, artificial extract and it's like the whole thing together. Oh, wow. That's fantastic. So I'm okay with that, you know, if it's used appropriately. So I think you had an excellent point, Michael, about, you know, balance and getting the whole thing together. And like Travis was saying, to answer the question, I'd wait until after, you know, the diacetyl rest and then go from there, you know, right after that or, you know, go cold. Okay. I think we really answered that one.
You are going to get so much hate mail on this one, Jamil.
Have we done a break yet?
I don't think so.
Damn it. We were supposed to do a break.
Well, we did the first break, at least.
We did.
Oh,
that might be the only one.
I can't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you, somebody was thankful. At least one of the 5 million people to listen to. And then we took a break. Thankful. We took a break.
Listener number two.
It's my turn to forget.
Okay. So let's take break number two. You can tell we drink doing these shows. All right. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Brew Strong. And the only reason I keep doing this show, I think, is really because I have fun doing it. I think, you know.
It's not the paycheck.
It's not the paycheck. You know, although the new Lamborghini parked in the driveway, that's pretty sweet.
Did you look at your products around your house, Jamil, and say, yeah, that was 5,000 hoodies right over there. Hell yeah.
Jeez. I'm just like, you know, I wish I could shop at Walmart, you know, but can't quite afford it at this point. Yeah.
How many mugs is it going to take to charge your Leaf?
Damn. Oh, all right. Let's see here. Enough fun. We should be answering emails.
Never enough
fun. And again, if you have questions for the geniuses here at Brewstrong, seriously, we do answer them even when we're drunk. We answer them to the fullest. Send your questions in to brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com and we get to all of them. Yes, some of these are from 10 years ago, but we're fully caught up on the recent ones, and we will keep up on those. So if you send in a question, we'll probably get to it at the very next show. If not that, then the show after. It hasn't been going any longer than that. But Jamil, we're mixing in these old ones, and I'm going to answer every damn question that was sent in. Hey,
the ones that are posted online.
Don't argue with me.
The ones that are posted online?
Yes. They're answered instantly.
They get answers.
You're right.
Hell yeah.
If you watch the show, like Ryan and Ezra and Jake and
Brent
and New and Catherine and Brent and Andrew, you get your questions answered right away. It's that easy. Follow us on social media, and when you see a show posted, you can just jump on. Generally, we're doing Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. You know which Wednesday that's going to change, but we're pretty much sticking with this day and time to try and keep it consistent for you folks.
It was at least 4 days, four hours notice this time. At least 4 hours notice today.
Well, I'm like, well, I could post it days earlier, but I know our listeners drink, and so they're not going to remember that. you know that we're going to do a show. So I'm like, I might as well just do it right before we go on because. That's their best chance of actually remembering, right?
Yep. Yep.
Or should I post it earlier?
Logic is sound.
I could post it like 2 weeks earlier and then remind them. How do I remind them? I go back to my post and post a reply.
Keep sharing your post to your story and like whatever. I don't know what the TikTokers do, but I don't even know if we do that.
I'm old. Yeah, I don't know what they do on the TikTok or the Facebook.
I could try.
Or the Instagram. I don't know. Somebody else needs to do this.
I just like that one will tag me and one will tag Mike and one will tag Jamil, but none will tag all three of us. That's what I like, you know?
Well, all right. Here's the problem is you guys don't have like any sort of standard amongst your three social media. I don't even know if Mike's on like Instagram or Twitter.
I tag him.
Well, all right. You share with me what your handle is on these things. Because I can't find it.
A comment responding to your post and they tag Mike Persai.
Well, there you go. Hey, I don't look at them. Once I post them, I don't look. I'm not on these things. I don't look at any of this stuff. I just posted to help out the guy. Hey, I had enough of you. All right, quiet. We've got questions to answer. What have you been drinking? Adding heat, Robert asks. Robert from Philly. Rob Philly says, guys, I'm thinking about brewing a porter and would like to spice it up a bit with my homegrown ghost peppers. I threw this question in for you, Travis.
Mm-hmm.
With these peppers, it's easy to go overboard. I would like advice on how to get the right amount of space in the beer. Space? Spot. It says space.
I know what it says.
The expert is saying,
you're like Ron Burgundy, where you just read exactly what the teleprompter says.
At this point, yes.
Fire us, Mike.
Right amount of spice in the beer, 5 gallons, without willy-nilly throwing them in there. I purchased some porters and made a ghost pepper vodka. I put 1 mil into one, sipped it, and then added more until it tasted great. Figured out the math, cracked how much into 5 gallons. I did a few other things, and I came back to the beer and got no heat. When I got to the end of the glass, it was hotter than the devil's ass. The only conclusion I can come to is that vodka is denser than beer, and after sitting, sank to the bottom. If I were to do this method, the first few pints of my keg would kill you, and the rest would be plain porter. Do you have any recommendations to add a measured dose into a beer, or is it just trial and error? Feel free to summarize if you ask around.
Rob was drinking.
Yeah, all of us are. You know, generally the you know, tincture blends up well. I mean, yeah. Do you not mix it in well? I don't know, because vodka will, alcohol has quite an affinity for water, which is most of beer. So it blends in really well if you use vodka and, you know, just mix it in well. The thing that I always did is that I would, you know, do the math, and I would go like, all right, here's the amount that we need to do. And then I would go, I'd add like 3/4 or, you know, 5/6 of the amount to the beer, shake it up, taste it, and see if it needed the rest of it, just in case, you know, just in case some of the measurements were off, you know, because you can always add a little bit more, but you add too much, backing off requires brewing a whole nother beer. All right. So yeah, Travis, you're the pepper guy. Tell us, you know, how would you go about it? What do you think is the right technique here?
I would do what you're saying. And I am a pepper guy. I'm not a pepper beer guy. And Jamil, you are a pepper beer guy. I mean, you had Pepper Beer Festival.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, I sent you peppers for it and so forth, but you had a Pepper Beer Festival. And as you said, and Mike probably doesn't even want to say it, alcohol in no form, like vodka, is not heavier than beer, unless there were solids involved.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Perhaps the tincture was, maybe he ground up the ghost peppers into a powder, and maybe he got some powder that settled.
Didn't filter it out, something like that.
Could there have been maybe just a, like, if he doesn't mix it, and I've always heard that capsaicin doesn't really dissolve in water. That's why water doesn't help you when you're. Yeah, so.
But it dissolves in alcohol.
It does dissolve in alcohol. So then that's where I'm not really sure about all that.
And the alcohol bonds to water. Well, yeah.
Makes an emulsification? I don't know. I mean, that would be a hell of an emulsification.
Be a lot of spicy. So I've had some friends that do spice beers, and yeah, the ones that have done it where they try to do it in the brewery or in the fermentation, it never really has a lot of spice. So I think he's on the right track with trying to adjust it on the finished beer. I would think if you're worried about mixing, maybe you're adding to your fermenter and then transferring. So all that shaking and mixing when you're sending it through the lines and into the keg, you get a good mix. But then I like what Jamil said, where you kind of, you know, you get 5/6 of the way there and then check it and make sure it's not too much.
I was dosed in the keg.
Did you have a problem with separating, Jamil?
No.
I mean, if it did separate, worst case, the oil, which capsaicin's an oil, would float on top.
Right.
Which means that last pint, well, that would be the ass burner.
Right.
And but that's where
I would be think Travis's like, kind of beer.
Yeah. Throwing it in the fermenter. Are you saying during fermentation, or did you wait till it was finished?
No, I go into the corny keg.
Yeah.
With the finished beer, I'd make a tincture and add it to there. Okay. You know, same thing.
Because that would mix it too. I don't think he's going to have a problem as long as he gets a good mix.
At Heretic now, granted, it's not quite as hot a beer, but we did a habanero beer called Primo Diablo. And it's essentially our evil cousin double IPA with habanero extract, and so we would habanero extract and we'd throw in some what are the non-hot habaneros?
Oh, it's a handful of them.
Yeah, the
Texan A&M makes one. New Mexa.
Oh, the one, you know which ones we ended up using. I ended up getting the seeds and growing them.
Well, I sent you so many options, I wasn't sure which one actually worked out.
Anyways, but we would make a tincture with those, and then, you know, just dose the kegs with it. And it was the same pint for pint for pint. Or, yeah, sometimes we'd dose the fermenter too.
But at the end of the day, you're dosing
when it was done.
You're dosing it and then filling that keg, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get all that mixing action when you're filling it.
Yeah. And we bubble some CO2 through it. You know, we really didn't notice the heat changing. very much. So I don't know. I don't know what the issue could have been for Rob.
I bet the seeds that work for you were the New Mexico State University seeds, because they were developing two or three different.
Was it Suave or something?
Yes. Yeah. In MSU Suave or New Mex Suave. I think that's it. Yeah.
They were excellent. Good, tremendous habanero flavor and no heat. And so we use those with the full hot habaneros, and it worked out great. All right. Rob, another Rob? Different Rob? I don't know. Fellas, can you do a show about scaling beer recipes? I know Jamel has touched on it in the past, but I think many of us would appreciate a more thorough discussion. Almost every recipe out there is for 5 gallons, but what if you want to do 1, 2.5, 10, 20, 30 gallons? How do ratios of base malts to other malts and steeping grains change? Does the ratio of hops stay consistent, i.e. does 2 ounces in a 5-gallon recipe equal 8 ounces in a 20-gallon recipe? Do you still need to boil for 60 or 90 minutes? Do you need to mash for more or less time? What are some best practices and pitfalls to avoid? I ask because personally, I want to make 2 to 2.5 gallons at a time in order to brew more frequently and get better without costing me a ton of money. Making 5 gallons at a time would be more beer than I can drink and I want to pay for. But as Jamel says, I also want to make more than 5 gallons of some bigger beers that I can keep in kegs for a long time, like Russian Imperial Stouts, Barley Wines, etc. Thanks, and brew strong, Rob. Yeah, really, what I've discovered over the past, going from commercial size recipes down to homebrew for Can You Brew It, going from homebrew recipes up to commercial size recipes for pro-ams and for, Heretic and for other things. It's simple, straight math. Just to multiply or divide, it is consistent. The thing that changes is the equipment you're using. So 20 gallons is 4 times the ingredients that 5 gallons is. Really is. What happens is, the fermenter geometry changes. Look at, listen to the previous show if you want to learn about that. So fermenter geometry changes, or you get to you're brewing 1,000 gallons, because you won the pro-am competition, you're brewing 1,000 gallons of your 5-gallon batch, and it's in a tall fermenter. You need to up the heat a little bit on fermentation in order to get the same ester profile. As far as hop utilization. The hop utilization doesn't change. It's physics, chemistry, whatever it might be. The hops are the same. Boiling is the same. What happens in commercial breweries sometimes is that they have a calandria where they're really not boiling very hard, but the calandria is, violently throwing things. So it mixes a lot better. It's the mixing. It's not that they're doing a different heat or anything like that. It's that the wort's being mixed more. In homebrew, you just need to be at boiling temperature, and then you could stir it, and that would do kind of the same thing. The extract. So here's the one thing that kind of changes when you're doing large batch of a homebrew recipe is that a commercial brewery may have a more efficient extraction than you do in your home brewery. Doesn't mean it's better. It means that there's an adjustment to be made on that recipe. And the adjustment to be made for extraction efficiency is that you need to adjust the base malt up or down generally, and not adjust the other things. So that's one type of scaling. If you're trying to scale, let's say you're trying to take a recipe that you have a session IPA that you want to make into a triple IPA, and there's some crystal malt in it. You don't just multiply everything up to the higher gravity thing. You would increase. You need to be very careful, because if you have a 4% beer with 3% crystal malt, and you make a 12% beer, you don't want a 9% crystal malt. It's going to be
might not want three.
It's going to be syrupy sweet, right? You may not want three. You may want one because, as a percentage of the grist, it's going to be substantially more crystal malt. And the thing about ABV is that's mainly done off of base malt. You don't really want to do it off of the specialty malts. So that's my rant. What do you guys say?
Two things. I've brewed from 5 to 50 gallons personally, and all I've ever done is scale. The only concern I've ever had is efficiency, because that affects flavor a bit. And I expect, and gentleman asks, I can call our listeners gentlemen, can I? The gentleman asked about homebrew scale size. I don't think there's an issue there. I don't scale my recipes for pro-ams, luckily. The person who knows that equipment does. And when I provide my recipes to them, I provide them with my expected efficiencies on mash and brew house. So they know how much wort I waste and they know how well my mash runs. And they adjust that to their brew house, the few pro-ams I've had.
My rant would be for this individual, as long as you're not changing the style, you have nothing to worry about except for the proportional difference between the two volumes. Just multiply everything by the volume you want divided by the volume of the recipe that you have. Multiply that through on everything. You'll be fine. Second thing, like Jamil was saying, once you start getting into different equipment, different, you know, if you made your beer on a single vessel Brewzilla and you go to brew it on a three vessel, you know, traditional brew house, yeah, you're going to need to maybe take into consideration some flavor impacts. But I just want to reiterate to the actual question that going from 5 to 2.5, that's half, use half the ingredients, half the yeast, half the hops, half the yeast, or half the malts, everything half, you'll be great. I would recommend getting a calculator, like a Brewsmith or something, and
divide by two.
And times 1/2, divide
by two. You may find one on your phone.
Yes. Anyways, what was I saying? Derail. I would get a nice brewing recipe calculator that you could, if you're changing styles and volumes and or things like that, you could, you know, make those adjustments.
I thought you meant like the old TI calculator.
No, I'm
TI scientific calculator. Divide two.
There you go. Right. Full circle. It's half. Yeah. Divide by two. You're good.
Yes. Excellent. Okay. Billy asks about water. He says, where is a good reference for the desired water profile per beer type or beer SRM for a printable reference? Also, which water testing systems is tried and true for understanding my water to build a desired brewing water profile per beer I'm going to brew? Yes. In the back.
Yes, sir. I have some things to say. For your water that you get out of your tap, you can contact your water company and ask for a water report. Don't ask for the regular one everybody gets. You can ask for the actual one that you would want for brewing. Usually the water companies are also tracking the same constituents and they can get that to you. If not, I use the Lamont Brew Lab once upon a time. This podcast had them as a sponsor. It's a fantastic product. I use it every quarter. To check my tap water. What was the first question?
We used the Lamont at Heretic, the pro version of it.
Yeah.
It was excellent.
I have the plus.
I mean, there you go.
So there you go.
I'm not sure which is better. Do you have the note? do you have the ultra?
The difference, I think, was only it had a very good pH meter with yours.
No, he had a DO. I have the pH too. He got the DO meter, the probe. Which was dope for doing.
Huh?
But okay, the first question was on styles for the water profiles.
Where is a good reference for the desired water profile per beer type or beer SRM for a printable reference?
So how to brew covers some of them.
I use,
but I don't think
go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think he goes in depth there, and there is the water book, but that might be more than somebody might be looking for. It's not a quick reference.
Now there's also, I couldn't find it on Android, but on iPhone, there's the Palmer Water Adjustment app. He actually has his own app, and it has every style that was in the BJCP 2008. So it is a little dated. It's not going to have like hazy in there, but yeah. And then he also had, like the Adam just noted in the chat that there's also the spreadsheets that the app are designed off of. are available online, and those have all of the different water profiles. Keeping in mind that it's whatever you want to do. I mean, there's the style, you know, kind of starting point, but if you want to modify the flavor any which way, you can certainly do that and not.
It's like seasoning your food. You may want a little more salt or a little less pepper or whatever it would be, you know, so however you're cooking your beer, you would adjust from that. And I will say, at some point, there's another Brewing Classic Styles coming out, and that will have all the water profiles in it.
Very nice.
Awesome.
So we're working on that. All right. One last break. One quick break, and we will finish up. We'll be back right after this.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Brew Strong, sponsored by Blickman Engineering. You check them out, blickmanengineering.com. They've been sponsoring this show for 16 years or so, so you do not have to pay for it. I would, you know, if you have a little bit of time, you know, just rattle off a quick email to feedback@blickmanengineering.com and tell them how much you appreciate that they sponsor the show. And chances are they'll keep doing it. So, please rattle off that email right away.
I'm wondering who's checking the email, and maybe we should flood it before they find it again. And so then when the new managers, runners, owners get that email inbox, all of a sudden, bam, you know, that would really be wonders. Wow. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So if all three of you were to send an email, I would blood it. Casey asked for some travel recommendations. She says, "Hi, Jamel. I've been listening to the BN for what seems like forever. And first want to say thanks for all the good info you've provided over the years. I can't tell you how many times I've referred to Brewing Classic Styles or a recipe you guys covered in Can You Brew It?" I'm still very proud of what we did on Can You Brew It? Last week, I was listening to the show with tips and recommendations on traveling to England. And you offered comments about Cologne and Dusseldorf caught my attention. I have a trip to Europe planned this summer, including 3 days in Cologne and a day trip to Dusseldorf. If you have any specific suggestions, recommendations about Kolsch or alt beers I absolutely can't miss, or anything else about either city, I'd love to hear them. Let's see. This isn't a question for the show, really. More a question for you as an experienced traveler. Thanks in advance. All right. Cologne is nice. Cologne, the cathedral is amazing.
Yeah, Cologne Dome, absolutely.
Yeah, the beer is okay. I mean, it's, you know, there's, technically, I think there's only like two breweries that are still operating in Cologne. Maybe there's some new startups or something, but they brew like the five Kolsches that you'll find, and you can try all of them within 2 hours, just walking around a little circle right next to the cathedral there. It's a nice town, but I would prefer to stay in Dusseldorf myself. Dusseldorf is more my kind of town. It's better beer, better food, nicer people. I mean, there's nice people in Cologne, but Dusseldorf's a little more blue collar. I don't know. And the beer is excellent. And there you have five alt breweries still in the city center there in Dusseldorf, and making some amazing beer. And you know, it's different enough that you can actually taste the differences. They're not all made at, you know, one of two breweries or anything like that.
Jamil, do you know that that's like LSU versus Alabama?
Yes, I know.
You're going to get some hate.
Yeah, I was worried about that.
Yes, there is some hatred there. But, yes. You know.
Some Cologne meals.
I'm a Dusseldorf guy.
Me too, anyway.
I am declaring I'm a Dusseldorf guy. It's truly fantastic. You know, what's the recommendations? One recommendation would be grab a back issue of BYO. I just recently did a article about Dusseldorf and brewing the Sticke and Lotzenbier special releases. And in there, I put some recommendations on if you're traveling to Dusseldorf. If you're there from the main Hauptbahnhof, the main train station, you can just walk to Schumacher. That's about like a 5 minute walk, maybe 10 minute walk. And Schumacher, just fantastic beer, fantastic. Say hi to, Fabio for me. You won't be disappointed. From there, you can walk to the Altstadt. It's another 10 minute, 15 minute walk to the Altstadt. And then there's the other four, true alt beer brewers. You can just walk, Erge, Kurzer, Schlüssel, probably my absolute favorite. Schumacher and Schlüssel both are just fantastic.
So you pronounce the one on the river differently than I read it. I say Jürge, and you said
Erge.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Because I had been saying it wrong.
I don't know. That's just what German people in Dusseldorf said.
So. That's probably correct then.
That's probably
insane. Yeah, and right
on the river. They may have been just joshing me as the Rube from America.
They might have a different name other than Josh. Josh doesn't sound very German. They might have been
Josephine.
Mikkelinia. I don't know.
You were getting Werner.
I've spent quite a bit of time now in Dusseldorf, surprisingly, because I wanted to be for all the special releases. It's fantastic. And after you do that, you can take the metro back from there in the Altstadt to the main train station. It takes just a couple of minutes. It's like two stops and you're there, a couple of bucks, and it's very clean, efficient, runs every few minutes. It takes you right back down there. And the only reason I'm not saying, you know, train station down to the Altstadt and back, you have to hit Schumacher. You cannot skip Schumacher. But all these just beautiful, beautiful places and fantastic beer. So check them out. There's other stuff around Dusseldorf to see. Like I said, it's a beautiful town and great people. And Cologne's wonderful too. And
yes, you know, do your day trip and check out Cologne Dome, the cathedral.
Right.
It's amazing. Then come on back to Altstadt, you know.
Right. Here's the other thing is, most of the places in Dusseldorf, some of them open around 11 or noon, but most of Dusseldorf does not really get cracking until like 3 in the afternoon. Whereas in Cologne, stuff is open during the day. So you stay in Dusseldorf and travel to Cologne on the train. You can do all your stuff there during the day. You could be done with all the Kolsch tasting by like 11 o'clock in the morning. And then, you know, but there's other tourist things to do there. Cologne's very beautiful. And then, you know, when you return to Dusseldorf in the evening, Dusseldorf's cracking, you know, and you can hit everything in the evening. One other tip is
the pig knuckles going through the rotisserie.
Oh, man. The pork knuckles are tremendous. But one other thing is the train between Cologne and Dusseldorf, takes like less than 30 minutes unless you pick the slow train. So there's, you know, it seems like the same train, but it'll take 90 minutes instead of 30 or 20. Right. So just be sure that the one you're getting on, and Google knows the difference. Cause you know, you'll be like, oh, you know, this train's going to the same place. Yeah, but it stops at every little spot on the track that somebody could climb off of the train. So
you want the express.
Yeah, you want the quick one.
That's not the German word, but you want the German word, right, for express is what you want.
Yeah. And you know, Google will tell you. But you know, just make sure you're getting on the right train. But yeah, that whole area of Germany is just fantastic. You know, the people are wonderful, the food's wonderful, the beer is wonderful. It's just, you know, you really can't go wrong. It's a wonderful place to be. Yeah. Everybody who loves beer should give it a try. I wouldn't miss it. Anything else, Dan?
I want to go.
Go. You wanna yeah. Go? Yeah. Seriously. You want to go to Altstadt? You do. To do
some. I love alt beer. So yeah. Bucket list.
Yeah. I'm going again. Wait. I think in September. I'm going to be through there again. The guy at Schumacher said, hey, come by. I'll give you a personal tour. I'm like, all right.
So I thought when I went, Jamil, and that was about 2013, I thought there were 7 to 8 still in the Altstadt area. You're telling me there's about 5 now, and it's kind of sad.
There's technically 5. Yeah. So there are 7 to 8 that purport to make alt beer, but they don't actually brew alt beer in Dusseldorf.
Okay, so most of the ones I went to, it was like a year ago, I was there. Mm-hmm. One or two was like, oh no, the brewery's across the street and it's closed right now. It might have been that I went to one or two that were fooling me and their brewery was not in Altstadt or not in Altstadt anymore.
Right. Yeah. Some of them got purchased.
Okay.
And so they're, you know, so now it's like a conglomerate that owns it. Maybe they're, you know, still brewing. But if you want to be purist, there's 5.
Still 5 independents. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty fantastic. All right. You know what else is fantastic? Blickman Engineering. Check them out. BlickmanEngineering.com. Please send them a kind email telling them thank you for sponsoring the show. Even if you think the show sucks. Yes. Come on.
Buy a beer gun.
Blow some smoke up Blickman's ass.
Buy a beer gun. Yeah. If you don't have one, you need one. Decent. Buy a beer gun.
Right.
Yes.
That's true. You really should have a beer gun. I mean, how, you know, unless you're buying like a canning machine, yeah. You should still buy a beer gun.
There, like, yeah.
Even if you're buying a canner, you still have a beer gun to fill the cans.
I do. Right? I do beer gun with cans at my house. So. Oh, yeah. I love it.
Well, we'll have to do a packaging show now.
I'm in.
All right. No? Yes?
Actually, I think you can.
All right.
There's the canner off in the distance.
People with their fancy gear. Oh. Yeah. I'm filling casks. I'm open fermenting and filling casks. I'm an old school.
That sounds fancier, actually.
Doing beer engines, I don't have this new modern technology.
You can get a can anywhere. Technology you can't get a beer engine anywhere.
I got technology from 150 years ago. Thank you all for listening. Like I said, if you have questions, send them in to brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com. And then those people who listened live, they got their questions answered pretty much immediately. Tune in if you get a chance. We post on social media. It's generally Wednesdays at 6:30. PM Pacific time, which Wednesday changes, but we've been sticking to Wednesdays at 6:30 to make it easy for everybody. So we'll continue to do that for the foreseeable future until Travis moves or Michael gets a different job. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, I'll be here.
All right.
As long as you have.
Until then, everybody. Brew strong.
Brew strong.
Brew strong.